Very nice to welcome all of you on YouTube. Welcome all of you who are here. We're here today in Fishers, Indiana. Just a joy to share this opportunity with you. So let's begin today, first of all, by just briefly reviewing a little bit from our fifth Sunday seminars. One of the things that was very interesting in the past, a couple of months ago, when we did our fifth Sunday seminar, we talked about the notion of the dynamics of creation, and especially the dynamics of creation that are manifesting in you. And what we found was that over the period of those last couple of months, we've just have found many people have been very successful in their lives. People just doing everyday practical things, sometimes a little smaller, sometimes a little bigger. But it's been wonderful to be able to see people putting into practice the dynamics of creation within themselves. And certainly our goal here today would be a continuation of that, to know those dynamics of creation, particularly within yourself, but in just kind of an expanded session here today. Also, what we're going to be doing, of course, here today more particularly, is to talk about the direct and indirect paths to God. The direct and the indirect paths to God. Especially what we'd like to do is to be able to, in a sense, release a lot of the vague beliefs, or release things that no longer make sense to us, especially releasing guilt and the notion that we might be sinful or something like that, and rather to substitute in its place, that we might have a sense of clarity, a sense of confidence, and a sense of co-creating in the world. So that's our goal today, and the direct and indirect paths to God, to have that sense of joy and happiness within ourselves, and that stimulation, I think, that raises all of us up. So let's begin. If you'd open up your packets, on the left-hand side of your packet, I'd like to first of all call your attention on the left-hand side of your packet to a particular presentation. The left-hand side of your packet... In the left-hand side of your packet, we have two particular phrases that are kind of interesting for us. The top phrase, Jesus, I trust in you. If you would address the notion, well, who is being addressed in that top phrase? The person being addressed in that top phrase would obviously be Jesus, and the people, in a sense, that are in turn would be addressed in response would be each one of us, that Jesus, well, we have trust in you. In the bottom half, there's a little different presentation. In the bottom half, who is the person being addressed? All of us. And Jesus saying very clearly in the bottom half of the presentation, I have trust in you. I have trust in you. So I'd like you to focus on this just for a moment. In the top part, Jesus is being addressed by each of us. I have trust in you. But it's the bottom part that is really the more important part when he says, I have trust in you. And probably in this brief little synopsis, you see the two different paths. The first one more the indirect path, where I have trust in someone or something that is outside of me, as opposed to Jesus or the Buddha or anyone else saying, I have trust in you, which is the direct path. I'm just going to say that again. In the top part of the address, you have your trust in someone or something that is outside of you. You have an indirect pathway. On the bottom part of the address, it's a little different. It's much more that individual person or individual guide having trust in you. That is the direct path to the divine. Well, we're going to do this in a lot of different ways today. And the first way we're going to do it is kind of like with the Wizard of Oz and the Yellow Brick Road, etc. So now if you take out your packet on the right-hand side of your packet, you'll be able to follow pretty much, in a sense, the outline that we want to present today. On the right-hand side of the packet, we're just going to take, in a sense, a few fun facts from The Wizard of Oz. Probably all of us know The Wizard of Oz, one of those lovely, lovely movies, and has so many different things that are involved with it and so on. But let's begin just a little bit with just some fun facts, as I mentioned. First of all, does anyone know when the movie itself came out? 1939. Mary, you're going to have everything. I know you're going to do it. Did it win the Academy Award that year?
No.
No, it did not win the Academy Award, because the Academy Award was won by
Gone with the Wind.
Gone with the Wind, yeah. Just one of those interesting notions. And we know that, I think, probably Judy Garland starred in the movie. But do you remember who the Scarecrow was?
Ray Bolger.
Ray Bolger. Oh, boy, Patty. Right on target over there, huh? And do you remember who the Tin Man was? I think it was originally Buddy Ebsen. At least that's what I understand anyways. Maybe someone else a little bit later on. And then do you remember, in a sense, who the Cowardly Lion was?
Bert Lahr.
So just kind of fun to go back over all of those particular things and just to see the characters were involved with all of them. It's still kind of fun to watch on the movie or to watch on TV to see all of the different things that are involved, etc. What I'd like to do is, in the second particular aspect, under the fun facts and so on, I want to talk about six particular aspects of the movie, And then what I'd like to do is, as I talk about those six aspects of the movie, then I'm going to move into the indirect path to God and then move us into a meditation. But let's begin, first of all, in a sense, with those six particular aspects of the movie. The first part of the movie, in a sense, the first aspect was the fact that each one of the people in the movie wanted something to complete themselves. Pretty interesting notion. They just wanted that something to complete themselves. So for Dorothy, that what she wanted to complete herself was to be able to
go home.
That was Dorothy. So her basic notion was, I simply want to go home. Very important. The Cowardly Lion, he wanted to complete himself by
courage,
a lot of strength, power within himself and so on. The Tin Man,
heart.
And then the Scarecrow, he wanted a
brain.
So it's just kind of interesting because you begin to see that, and you can see kind of everything kind of working through. Everybody seems to need or want something to complete themselves. Just say it again. Everybody seems to want something to complete themselves. Obviously, we'll talk about that as we progress. The second basic idea behind The Wizard of Oz was they were told by a friendly witch, the Witch of the
West,
and her name was
Glinda.
And they were told by Glinda that, by and large, they were to follow a yellow brick road so that they could eventually get to a wizard. So, rather an interesting notion. The idea, very simply, was that, well, if they would just follow this road, they would be able to go to a wizard who could help them. Very much kind of an indirect path. If you just follow this road, we'll take you somewhere where you can finally know this wizard. A little different than maybe a more direct path. So that yellow brick road is pretty reminiscent of a lot of people, family, and so on, who kind of tell us, well, you should go this way, as opposed to maybe a direct path between yourself and the divine. Just a little something. The third fun fact, in a sense, was that the wizard really was not a wizard at all. The wizard, more than anything else, was kind of someone behind smoke and mirrors. He was a sham. So the third basic fact was, for many people, in a sense, the wizard himself was not all that he was cracked up to be. Could it be that many times certain people, situations, maybe even churches, are not all that they are cracked up to be? Just an interesting notion there, just a little interesting idea behind everything. But the fourth basic idea was that the wizard told them something that was very, very important. The wizard, in a sense, told them that what they had was something that could complete them, and that something that could complete them was with them all along the time. So the wizard told them something that was very interesting. What you have is already within you. What you have is already within you. That's a pretty interesting notion. It's amazing at times, is it not, how the Wizard of Oz has a lot of things to it all of a sudden, things maybe you never even thought about. But it's such a very wonderful thing to notice that, in that fourth particular area, the wizard said something very important. You already have something within you that can complete you. The fifth basic notion behind the movie itself was, of course, he pointed out to them what they had within them. And I'm just going to, since we're taping, I'm just going to suggest, Dick, that you can come right over here. Now you're on YouTube. And with our little packet of information and so on. And Jane, maybe you could just point out to where we are in the outline and so on too. So the fifth basic notion was that they already had that something within them to complete them. And of course, for Judy Garland, essentially what she needed to do was to click those ruby red slippers and allow herself to go back home. And then again, the Scarecrow, he had within him already a brain, very, very interesting, which he demonstrated along the way. The Lion had that courage and strength, and the Tin Man had that heart. So it was very interesting because you begin to see what is unfolding, that everybody already has within them what they already need, they already have within them their fulfillment or their completion. The difficulty is sometimes we look outside of ourselves rather than within ourselves for what is the more important thing in life. And then the last particular notion, the sixth item in the movie itself, Judy Garland's going to click her heels and so on and say, well, there's no place like home. There's just no place like home. And I just want to suggest to you, quite frankly, is there's no place like God. There's no place like the divine. There's no place like that place that is within you. There's just no place like that place that is within you. Well, that's kind of a nice little synopsis of the movie. Kind of fun. A lot of very interesting things there. A lot of ideas. And perhaps maybe if you see the movie again, you'll see it with new eyes. Just a whole different way of looking at the situation, because you just see it, in a sense, a tad differently. So with those ideas in mind, what I now would like to share with you would be the basic points that we now want to address as we go forward. I'm going to address the first two points, and then after the first two points, we're then going to move into our meditation. The first point that I would want to address to you that is very important is that each person wanted something to complete themselves from within. So you start taking a little look at this, and this becomes pretty important. Human beings have wanted to be complete for years. And the basic idea, I think, behind completion is you try to look for those things that will make you complete in life. For many of us, probably our initial way of looking at things is we kind of look at relationships. We think that relationships will be those things that complete us in life. And then you think about it at times, and sometimes maybe they seem to, sometimes maybe they do not complete us. Or sometimes we find in life that maybe wealth will complete us. We think that in some way, shape, or form, some kind of money or some kind of power that is outside of us, in a sense, will complete us. So you just think about that on an ongoing basis. So many times we just look for things outside of us so that they might complete what is inside of us. And then you just ask yourself, now is that true? Is there anything out there that will really complete what is going on within me? Or is there something within me that is beyond simply external completion? Is there something within you that is more than just that which is outside of you? It's a very, very interesting idea. And then you have the notion of the Buddha himself. The Buddha himself, he would just say that so many things here in life are filled with suffering. And you just wonder, in fact, that, well, gosh, if illness, age, and death is waiting for us, what's the use? There's almost nothing that's going to complete yourself, that either illness, age, or death, either coming to you or coming to another, will not, in a sense, have a tendency to destroy. So you just wonder along the way, is there something, in a sense, outside that really, in a sense, will complete us from within? And then particularly, you have that very interesting passage from Augustine, when Augustine said, our hearts are restless until they rest in thee. That's a very, very interesting notion, that our hearts are restless until they rest in that presence that is within us. So when you think about those particular things, you begin to realize that in many ways, it seems like things outside of ourselves have a tendency to take over. They just seem, in a sense, to say, well, these are the things you should be involved with. But it seems like so many times, those things you're most involved with, sometimes, many times, are the things that least complete you. And you just have to take a look at that and just say, am I complete? Am I filled up? Or am I maybe fooling myself, maybe not going into something a little deeper in life? So the first basic point behind everything is that there seems to be something within us. There seems to be something within us that in the long run, by and large, seems in a sense to be a little more external than internal. And we look for that internal completion. It's the second basic point behind this now that I most want to focus on. The people were told by that nice witch of the north, I think, that Glenda was her name, that if they just followed this yellow brick road, they would then be able to find those things that might be able to complete them. So what I want to suggest to you is that when we talk about the people in our lives, and oftentimes the people in our lives are the people, in a sense, who tell us what to do. And let me just suggest a couple of things to you. And again, these are all very positive things, but you kind of start with the individual. And the individual has kind of a lot of people in their lives that are very, very important to them. And usually those people in life that are very, very important to them, usually we talk about kind of family, friends, maybe society, religion, whatever it might be. So over here, let's just say that you have family. And your family is very important to you. They try to give you the right guidance in life and so on. And what becomes interesting is that just from being a little tyke, just a little child, usually most of the things that families end up doing are saying, what do you want to do when you grow up? Or what do you want to be when you grow up? And automatically, in a sense, you're kind of thrust into that external world. I want to be this, I want to be that, I want to be a teacher, doctor, whatever it might be. And most people, in a sense, within the family confines, they just really do the very best they can to assist people in their growth and development. And then, of course, you have friends. And the presumption is you have good friends in life, and sometimes they're very helpful to you, maybe sometimes not always the most helpful to you, but friends do the very best they can to assist you. And many of us have friends that are very important to us. They try to show us, in a sense, ways to go, paths to move in, and so on. And then, of course, you have society on the whole. And society will try to say, well, you know, you ought to do this, or you ought to do that. You have to put food on the table. You have to find your niche in the world. You have to be able to make sure you make a living and all the things that are involved. And then sometimes you have even religions. And religions have a little bit more of a tendency to say, well, you know, you ought to take this road, or you ought to take that road. You ought to be able to, in a sense, move in this direction, or you ought to be in that direction. And sometimes it's just mind-boggling. You just really don't know what to do. Sometimes you're just not sure. Should I listen to my family? Should I listen to my friends? Should I listen to society? Should I listen to religion? So many of these things have a tendency to kind of almost overwhelm us. We're just not sure of what we should be doing in life. Well, what begins to happen then? What begins to happen in our unsureness? What begins to happen when we are unsure in life is that between yourself and the divine, between yourself and the divine, what begins to happen is that somewhere along the way, you feel that you're going to need an intermediary. In that most important aspect in life, you begin to feel that, well, who are you to know what's really important in life? Surely your family, your friends, society, and churches, they kind of know what's best for you. And you're the one, in a sense, who should be following what they are saying. It becomes especially important because so many times your family and friends tell you these things with great assurance. This is what you ought to do. This is the way to go forward. And you're just not quite sure at times to be able to think on your own, is this the way to go forward? So as a result, many times we have an intermediary, or what we would call an indirect path to the divine. And usually, the indirect path to the divine has three particular stopping places. Sometimes that intermediary results in a person. So that many times in life, in a sense, you have someone like Jesus. Or sometimes maybe you'll have someone like the Buddha. Or maybe you'll have someone like Krishna. Or maybe you'll have someone like Muhammad. And they're simply telling you, well, seemingly, this is what you ought to do. So you have someone like Jesus or the Buddha. Lots of different possibilities. Krishna, Muhammad, Lao Tzu, any of the gurus in life. They just have a tendency to say, well, you know, you ought to do this. You ought to do this. And many times, they can be very helpful in life. We're certainly not denying the fact that they can be helpful, but sometimes it seems like, gee, it seems like they're always telling you to do this and follow that, as opposed to maybe following something a little more internal. But in us being unsure, we're never quite sure. And as a result of that, you kind of follow the best advice you can get. Sometimes, in addition to a person who is guiding the way, sometimes you have a book that seems to tell you, well, this is what you ought to do. Sometimes that book might be the Bible. This could be one of those books. Could be the Bible. Could be the Quran. Could be the Bhagavad Gita. The only problem is sometimes the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, all in a sense kind of saying this is the word of God, seem to be at odds at times. And it's very difficult when you say, well, you should be following this if you're Christian, or this if you're Islamic, or this if you're Indian. And gee, you're not quite sure what to do. They all seem maybe logical, but especially when you're unsure, you kind of think, well, maybe I should do this, or maybe I should do that. The whole idea, by and large, is that, well, you're just not quite sure. And do I follow this person in that book, that person in this book? Or maybe I should follow just the church. That would be an interesting thing. So sometimes you have churches. Now, I never want to say this negatively, but churches like to tell you what to do. They just kind of say, you ought to do this, you ought to do that. This is the way that most of the churches have a tendency to operate. I don't say that negatively. I'm just saying it's kind of like the way that things are laid out for you. If you're going to be a good Christian, if you're going to be a good Jewish person, if you're going to be a good anything, then there's just a tendency for you to, well, this is what you ought to do. This is the pathway that you should be moving down. So it becomes a rather interesting notion. It's just very, very easy. It's just very, very easy. You're doing your best. And when you have all of these people telling you you should be doing a lot of these things, it's confusing. It's very, very difficult because you're not quite sure. Maybe aren't quite able to stand on your own yet to really be able to do what you kind of think you should be doing. And then you have this little interesting thing. It's the difference between being religious and being spiritual. It's a very, very interesting notion. So if we took the idea over here of being religious and then being spiritual, this kind of enters even a little bit more into the situation. Being religious usually means doing the things of your particular religion. Being spiritual usually means having a relationship to the divine. Well, let me just say it again. Being religious means to kind of follow the guidance of your religion. Nothing wrong with that. Being spiritual means more having a relationship to the divine, a more personal relationship. So what becomes interesting, however, is the fact that, well, can you be religious without being spiritual? Usually hypocrites, you know, kind of come to mind. You know, they say this, but it really boils down to that, that in some way, shape, or form, you can be very religious, but not necessarily spiritual. Can you be spiritual, but not necessarily religious? You know, probably many, many, many people in today's society are that. They are not necessarily religious, sometimes maybe turned off by this or that, but they're quite spiritual. Can you be neither religious nor spiritual? Yes, obviously you can be neither one of them. You can be neither religious nor spiritual. And yet on the other hand, can you be both religious and spiritual? Of course you can. Of course you can. It's just interesting in being religious and being spiritual to see all of the possibilities. Just to see all of the possibilities, wondering in a sense where someone might be, wondering if they are on this path or that path, wondering if they're a saint or an ain't, whatever it might be. Somewhere along the way, whether they're a sinner, whether they've been saved, whether this is going on or that's going on and so on. It just becomes a rather interesting quagmire of not quite sure where you are. One last thing. And that is the notion that many times the divine seems to be in a sense what we'll call transcendent. That kind of God is a presence that either up there or out there. So that sometimes we just kind of say that God is transcendent. Transcendent. And when you talk about God being transcendent, when you talk about God being transcendent, we're talking about the notion that it's kind of like many people will say, I talked to the man upstairs, or I talked to the woman upstairs. Yes, God is going to help me. Yes, I'm praying for something, and that outside something is going to come down and assist me in some way, shape, or form. I'm not suggesting that we do not think like that. What I'm just suggesting is, maybe is that all there is? Is God simply a presence that is out there, as opposed to more of a presence that is in here? Very, very interesting notion as we progress. So what I want to suggest to you now is going to be a direction in our meditation that we're going to move into, that based upon, in a sense, the movie The Wizard of Oz, you begin to realize there's a lot of nice people in your life who sure want to tell you a lot of things. And they do. Not saying they're negative, not saying they're bad, but it's just so easy to allow other people to do the direction in your life. And especially if we're unsure of that direction, especially when people talk very forcibly, yes, you should be doing this, yes, you must do that, then you're not quite sure. It just seems like, well, maybe I simply should follow that intermediary. Maybe I should follow the yellow brick road. Maybe I should follow the yellow brick road and go to that which is an intermediary, rather than knowing that more direct path that is within me. So what I want to focus on now in our meditation is to talk about more that direct path that is within me. And I'm simply going to define it for right now as a presence that is within you. A presence that is within you. May I say just one more thing before we begin? For many people, this pathway through the intermediary can be very helpful. It can be very helpful. There's just a difference between being helpful and being necessary. Just want to say it again. This intermediary position can be very, very helpful. The problem is sometimes it becomes necessary. And there's a big difference between what is helpful and what is necessary. Just want you to keep that in the back of your mind. There are many things that can be helpful, but when they become a necessity, then it seems like maybe they're overstepping their boundary. Just a suggestion to you. What we're going to be focusing in on now is kind of that presence within us. We're going to focus in on this in our meditation, and then we're going to, of course, move into a second meditation a little bit later on that'll be perhaps even a little more intense. But for right now, we're going to focus in on this presence within, as opposed to simply an external presence. So let me now take you into meditation. It's just a joy to take you into this meditation, and just what fun this is. Just a great happiness for all of us to come together and to be able to kind of start moving inward and to feel that presence within ourselves. Fully now dedicate yourself to this meditation. Let us now begin our meditation with a few breaths, just very simple breaths. An in and an out, just your natural breathing rhythm, and I'll come back to guide you shortly. Now what I ask you to do is just to familiarize yourself with the breathing. Would you just take a moment that on the in-breath, you would just say to yourself the word in. And on the out-breath, that you would say to yourself the word out. In on the in-breath, out on the out-breath. If your mind wanders, just bring it back. Nothing forced, but just stay focused in your natural breathing rhythm. Please begin. Now what I ask you to do, would you just take your hand and just place it over your heart area, your heart chakra? And as you inhale, again, just say to yourself the word in, or feel your lungs rising. When you exhale, say to yourself the word out, or feel your lungs deflating. Just feel the in and the out. Nothing forced, but very focused. Please begin. Now what I ask you to do is, would you put your hand on your belly, your stomach? And just notice that your diaphragm will open and close as your breath comes in and leaves. And just feel that, your diaphragm opening and closing as your breath leaves and then enters again. Please just feel that. You may now place your hand back on your lap. And I just ask you to continue the breath, nice and easy, focused, nothing forced. Would you now notice two things? The first one, in these past few moments, would you notice how calmer you are? That you've really settled down. There's a sense of peacefulness within you. Serenity. The tranquility. And just notice that. You're not as restless as you were. You've settled down. Would you notice something else? That the rhythm of your breathing has slowed. It's a little more extended. And just notice how good that feels, that nice, easy breathing rhythm. Notice that. We are now ready to do the work. Would you notice, first of all, that there really is an inner you? There's an inner you. It's not something you simply pay lip service to. There really is an inner you. You might be asking, what exactly is it? What is this inner me? What is it? Yes, I know it's there. Yes, I feel it. But what exactly is it? May I suggest it is two things. First of all, it is a inner presence. It is a presence within you. That's what it is. It's an inner presence. It is not an intermittent presence. But rather, in all the time, presence. Oh yes, you can forget about it. You cannot give it mind. You cannot be attentive. It just doesn't mean that it ever leaves you. There is just within you that presence. There's just that presence within. sometimes it shows up just as a calmness, a tranquility. It's like, so nice, so nice. Inner peace. Sometimes it shows up as a light. It's just a light. Absolutely clear. It's a light. An inner light. Pure and clear. Clear. Sometimes it shows up as a knowing. I know. I just know. I see clearly. From this presence, there's nothing to do in this inner light except to enjoy it. To enjoy it. A calmness. A light. A knowing. Nothing to do. Nothing to do, and yet everything to enjoy. But there's also something else about this inner you. It is a presence within you that is calm, illuminating, and knowing. But it is also a power. It is a power It is a power to do what? Whatever you desire. It is a power It is connected to your source energy. There is no intermediary. You are directly connected to source. As the Course in Miracles says, you're an idea in the mind of God that has not left its source. It's a power. It's a power. From the source. It's not a voice in your head that says, well, you should do this or you shouldn't do that. It's not what your friends would say or what your family would say. It's not what Jesus would say or the Buddha would say. It's not what a church would say. It is what you would say. Knowing your connection to your source. It's not in your head. It's not a mother, father, teacher, preacher. It's a voice within you. The still, small voice within. That will always tell you what to do. It will help you in little things, day-to-day things. You just have to take care of. It'll help you. It'll help you in bigger things too. Nothing is more powerful than it. Not just to meet a difficulty, but to meet a challenge. Nothing, nothing is more powerful than it. The power within you is always greater than any problem you'll face. It's a power, not in your head. It's a power in your spirit, in your Holy Spirit. It's a power. It is your inner power. This is you. This is you, peaceful and yet strong. Tranquil, calm. And yet powerful. This is you. This is you. Allow your inner power to permeate the things outside of you. Don't get lost in them. Don't get lost in what's going on outside of you to the detriment of what is going on inside of you. Live from within. And experience the joy. Would you now notice two last things? How peaceful you feel. Just how knowing that you are. And secondly, your breath has become meaningless. You've moved beyond the breath. To the inner you. Quite a place, quite a place. Return now to the rhythm of your breathing. Would you notice the difference between entering this meditation and exiting from it? There's just the presence within. And its power. There's just the presence. And its power. And just when you're ready now, bring your attention back into the room. Into your body persona. opening up its lovely eyes. In allowing your inner presence to shine through. Namaste.